Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, July 22nd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-4444. 5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Hope you're having a great day today. It is Monday, blah, 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 but hey, it's the start of another week, and I'm glad to be here. I hope you are too. Thanks for tuning in today. So I hope you had a wonderful weekend with family and friends. The weekend was split for us. You know, yesterday I had to bury my best friend, Phil Wolf, and left the homestead early yesterday morning about 9 o'clock and got up to the Alpharetta Johns Creek area and stopped at a place that Phil and Jen and I would often eat together at Whole Foods and took part of their buffet, really, I guess, in honor of Phil. We felt like he was sitting there right there with us while we were having lunch before the funeral, and got over there to the funeral about 1. Funeral started at 2, wanted to be there a little early since I was asked to be a pallbearer. And saw some old friends, that was good. Met some new friends that were also Phil's friends, which was good, that I had heard about, and a lot of them had heard about me and the whole nine yards. And it was a very nice service, very beautiful service, lots of wonderful, spiritual and uplifting music. The preacher didn't do a lot of preaching per se, but he did share some memories, of Phil, uplifted the packed house. It was packed, which doesn't surprise me, because Phil was just a really all-around great guy. He was a friend's friend. I mean, he was, for me anyway, the complete definition of a true friend. He had been a friend since the beginning, since before the Chicken Whisperer, anything like that had even started. So he's followed me through that entire process of developing the Chicken Whisperer, and it was a good process. He never had a negative thing to say. Me and Jen were talking about that. Regardless, it wasn't, oh, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, you better be careful, better. It was always 100% positive, 100%, and it was, but he was just that type of friend. A few years back, God, it was a long time ago, I mean, how many friends would let you borrow $1,200? No questions asked. Of course, I paid him back in full, but I needed $1,200, and he didn't even think twice about it. Do you have any friends that would loan you $1,200 just at the drop of a hat? Phil did. Paid him back, no interest, no nothing, just paid him back when I had the money. But that's the kind of friend he was. Nothing negative was ever said about anything, any harebrained ideas that we had or what have you. Just, you know, always an uplifting and positive type of guy. So I'm going to miss him a lot. But he's in a better place. Cancer got the best of him, I guess. But I don't know, obviously nobody on this planet hasn't been touched somehow by cancer, so it's just, I guess it's just one of those things. But he will be missed by many, and it was shown to be that case yesterday at his funeral. So long, my friend Phil. He had the flag was draped across the casket, since he was a veteran, Vietnam veteran, and again, he will be missed by many. So whenever I go down my Rolodex on the phone and see his name, I would just, yeah, I want to call him. I want to say, you know, call him and talk about what's going on today, what he's been up to, did he get anything at the hunt camp, you know, how his chickens are doing, you know, all that kind of great stuff, solving the world's problems. But he won't be on the other line. So, but I know that he'll be listening whenever I need to talk to Phil. He will be there. So, but and many of you liked him as well. But other than that, bittersweet weekend, just getting things, got a lot done here around the homestead, which was good. And the garden is pretty much done producing. You know, the hot, hot summer heat. We've had tons and tons of rain. So if it hasn't been rotted, it's already done produced. And I got the hair out and haired most of it down, harvested the corn, haired the corn down, and most everything else. There's still a few cantaloupes and watermelon plants out there, and they'll continue to grow. I'm sure. In fact, they look very, very good. All of our pumpkin dough, however, did rot. Pumpkin is kind of squash in the squash family, right? And we've had good luck with squash here at the homestead, but we didn't have good luck with squash up there when we were living in Atlanta. We would always get the stem going into the ground would rot. I think it would get some bugs or insects in them, and they would just end up rotting. Or we got so much rain, they rotted. And so here, last year we had amazing squash. This year, not so much down here because of all the rain. I contributed to all the rain we had. Same thing with our tomatoes. You know, you get a lot of rain, you get that blossom end rot. It'll rain, and the tomatoes will grow real quick, and then they'll split because they're growing so fast because of all the rain. So squash and the tomatoes here this year on the homestead weren't really well. Didn't do too hot. But everything else went real well. The peas, the beans, the okra. Good luck with melons this year. We didn't have a lot of luck with melons last year. This year we got good luck with melons, I guess because of all the rain. They like a lot of water. The corn was good. And Jen said it was absolutely wonderful, sweet and tasty, which was good. But other than that, for the most part, the garden is now done for the season until fall. And if we consider planting our fall garden. So got to love that. But a lot of work done at the homestead. So I hope you had a wonderful weekend with family and friends. And I'm just going to share this with you as well. When we went to a church service, I may have said this, we went to a church service, so not our own church, but another church on Tuesday. And me and Jen, you know, our longtime listeners know what our beliefs are and what our goals are and what's important to us. While we moved to the homestead, while we had to get away from where we were at, because, you know, cars are not important, houses are not important, Xbox is not important, Armani is not important, BMW is not important, family. And you know, you'll listen to us traveling as a family, always traveling as a family, me and Jen being together for 16 years, never spent a night apart, didn't live together before we were married, not judging anybody, just telling our story. Spending time with our kids is what's most important. Instead of reading a book about Mount Rushmore, we want to go visit Mount Rushmore and teach them Mount Rushmore. I know that life is not for everybody, and that is perfectly fine. Some people want the iPhones and the pools and the BMWs and the boats, and that's perfectly fine. Not judging anybody, but you know our life, what's important to us. And again, to remember what the preacher said back on Tuesday, which was before I found out Phil and before Phil had passed away, which me and Jen looked at each other and said, you know, we're already basically living that life. And he basically said that in 25 years of being a pastor, he has never, being on someone's bedside as they were taking their last breaths, he had never in 25 years heard anybody say, I wish I hadn't have done that. It was always, I wish I could have, should have, would have. You know, shoulda, coulda, woulda. I wish I would have spent more time with my family. I wish I would have spent more time with my son. I wish I would have taken that vacation. I wish I would have traveled more. I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that. And a lot of times it ends up being more time with the ones they love. There was a Facebook post the other day about, you know, when you're taking your last breath, is it going to matter how much money you have in the bank, what car you drive, what clothes you're wearing, what anything? And when you'll sit there probably thinking, like this pastor said, in 25 years, never heard of anybody say, I wish I wouldn't have done that. It's, I would have, should have, could have, wish I'd have spent more time. And so me and Jen looked at each other knowing our lifestyle, how much we love to travel, what our priorities are, and we're like, you know, that sums it up right there, that we feel that we're doing the right thing and that within the decision that we've had made. And we're very blessed both to have at least the last 2 years with her had employment with online teaching. And then me doing what I love as a hobby, but making it into a career. And I've been very blessed since this has been my full-time job for the past four to 5 years. So very, very blessed with that. We're able to do that and spend time with our family. Jen is going to be putting in her notice here next week. She is going to be a stay-at-home, which we never do, but for all practical purposes, stay-at-home mom. And continue to raise our kids and help me with the business side of Chicken Whisperer Inc. She's pretty much completed the new website. We're anxious to, we're just getting kind of all the information we need from both of our hosting companies to transfer things over to one hosting company and get that done. So probably in the next 7 days, it'll all be done, including our email So she's been a big help with that and will continue to help. And she'll be writing some curriculum part-time and doing some things like that to make a little income when she can. But for the most part, she will be stay-at-home mom. So she's a little, yes, it's uncharted territory because, you know, she was a brick-and-mortar school teacher for 7 years. And then we moved down here. She was going to be stay-at-home mom to the homestead 2 years ago, but she found an online teaching gig that she thought she might like, and she stuck with it for 2 years. And it's just not something that she's happy with. And she thought she'd have more time at home, more time with the kids, and there's a little bit of travel involved. Where she's a teacher and she has all her multiple degrees in teaching, it ended up, unlike in the brick and mortar school, where let's just say it's 80% teaching and 20% documentation, it's the exact opposite with this company. It's like 80%, maybe even 90% documentation, and then 10% actually teaching, which is what she loves to do. So she's just not real happy with it, and so we feel that it is that time. So a little uncharted territory. When we moved down here to the homestead, you know, we were up in that Atlanta environment, and it worried us a little bit. She said, you know what, if I go and do the online teaching, it was basically a $20,000 a year pay cut. Yeah, $20,000 a year pay cut from teaching in classroom. You know, a lot of people say, oh, teachers don't make anything, and, you know, we need to do more for teachers, blah, 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 blah. And after her, you know, being in the field for 10 years, multiple degrees, master's degree, specialist degree, you know, I know some states are a little bit different as far as pay scale, what they pay their teachers, but here's Jen that was teaching kindergarten, and she was bringing in $60,000 a year, $60,000 kindergarten teacher. So a lot of times we'll see these posts about, you know, teachers and oh, we don't make anything, we don't make enough, you know, garbage men make more. We just didn't see it. We were very blessed with that number. But then she, when she got the online position, it was $20,000 pay cut. So she'll be going down to a pay grade of zero, other than what she makes part time, kind of writing a curriculum on occasion and doing kind of her own thing. But yes, we do plan to homeschool. Someone was asking in the chat room. Jen is more than capable to do that, so we'll be homeschooling, and hopefully we'll be traveling a little more and doing a little bit more shows on the road and doing a little bit more events and seeing the country. So we're enjoying that, but we still love our homestead and love it here. So. But yes, I wanted to share that with you too, because I thought it might relate to a lot of you guys, and but a lot of you, all longtime listeners, know already how we live our life and why that's important to us. So, but nonetheless, we've got a great show lined up for you today. As always, we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, that's coming on, and we've got great topics today. Hopefully, you can pull out that Chicken Whisperer notebook, the big CW on that spiral notebook you've got, and take lots of notes. So the last couple of times he's been on, they've been fabulous shows. And you can listen to the archive. Every single radio show, I think today is show 839. We've done 839 episodes in almost 5 years. We're in our fifth year of broadcasting. And just absolutely amazing. So all those are archived for free. iTunes.com, podcast.com, Zoom.com, whichever one you like with your whatever player that you got. And we ask you to listen to the archive. Tell your friends about the archive. But we got Peter Brown coming on today, and which is going to be an awesome, awesome show. It looks like, and then I know this Thursday, it looks like we've got Richard Friedenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, and then I think tomorrow and Wednesday are open, so we'll see what guests we can have come on. May have to contact Prepper Penny. She's due to come on this month. Don't think she's been on in July. I think we've had her on once a month, but I don't think she's been on in July, so we'll definitely have to see if Prepper Penny can come on either tomorrow or Wednesday with another awesome topic. But Thursday, we've got Richard Friedenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. So hopefully you can tune in all week this week, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. So let's go ahead and go over to the phone lines here, and we'll bring on our good friend Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Let's give him a big round of applause. Hey, Peter, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for coming on today.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Buried my best friend yesterday, but, you know, I'm not the first person on the planet that's ever had to do that, so I'm just rolling with the punches like everybody else that's had to do that has done. And yesterday was pretty
pretty tough going, but hey, today is another day, and hey, you know what? Everybody on this planet one day is going to be put in the ground. So it's,
yeah.
it was Phil's time, no matter, you know, what we want to do. And so, hey, you know, it's like I said, many people have gone through what I've gone through. It's just, I don't think I've ever had to bury a friends, but not my best friends. So it was just kind of a little difficult yesterday, but today's a new day and we're moving on. And I know Phil want me to move on and continue this program and this show that he was a member of a lot of times in the chat room, many, many times, telling his funny jokes that he used to tell and things like that. But cancer got the best of him, and like it has so many people out there. And it's just one of those things. He never even got to the point where he could do chemo or really anything. Even the all-natural treatments that he wanted to try or wanted to do, he couldn't do because this unique cancer, he couldn't digest anything. Basically, Phil starved to death, bottom line. I mean, in the end, the cancer spread and it shut down his organs, but the bottom line was he just, for the most part, starved to death from day one back in December, January, and going to the doctor and being, you know, stage four immediately. And he did try to do what he could to be able to get some nutrition and be able to go the all-natural route. He wanted to try that or use it with the chemical route if need be. But he never could digest anything. So whether it be curcumin or herbs or, I mean, anything, even just good, solid food to give him energy to be able to do anything, even after the bypass surgery around his stomach, bypassing the tumor, he still never could get back where he could eat any type of solid food. So that was very detrimental to him, regardless of what path he wanted to take, natural or the kind of prescribed modern type treatment and medicine. Just couldn't do it because there's no way he couldn't consume anything. It was all the tube fed, my feeding tube, regarding that. So he basically starved to death until the cancer shut down his organs. But it's one of those things that that's going to happen. So, but we've got a great show. Thanks for coming on.
Sure.
And we've got a couple of topics that we may have talked about a little in the past, but I don't think we've actually specifically covered these in detail, which is we're covering the wry neck and limber neck and the differences between the two and what causes them and how they may be fixed and or prevented. So, again, folks, get your pens and paper out, this Chicken Whisperer notebook where you take all the notes when we have our guests on, and take these great notes down. So you'll know if you ever have a chicken in the future that has this, you'll know exactly what to do.
Yeah, they're an interesting phenomena that happens in poultry. Happens in people as well. Each one has a multitude of different types of causes, and but there are some subtle things that you can look at to distinguish between the two, and then try to lay out a course of action as to how you might go about fixing this particular situation. While it does occur in all different breeds of fowl, it is more prevalent in the silky breed, and that may be because of the vaulted skulls and less covering over the top of the skull, all different things as far as silkies are concerned. A lot of it has to do more than likely with inbreeding and that kind of thing. But for the most part, wry neck, as it is called, generally is something that we associate more with a vitamin and or a mineral deficiency. And I just want to step out to the side here just a tiny bit and go back and refresh people's memories for those that have listened to most of the shows. When we talked about supplementation, I think, in my opinion, from what I've seen over the years and recently in relation to wry neck, particularly silkies, but not necessarily directed directly at that particular breed, when you have a deficiency of something, we've talked about this as far as looking at breeding stock and getting them up to snuff before you put them together, and in case there is something, because you can't always see these things. You don't usually see them exhibit any kind of symptom or anything else until it's too late, until the problem is, you know, either full blown or right on top of you, and then going back and fixing them is a pain in the neck, and it's costly. For the most part, probably could have been prevented. And you never know which chick it's going to be. You never know which adult bird it's going to be. You just don't know. And there are a number of different reasons why these things happen. There is no real good research that you can, you know, lay your fingers on and, you know, that anybody has really, really done on any of the current situations. We all fly by the seat of our pants with it, looking at a bird, trying to make up our mind, is it this, is it that, and so on. But in the long run, looking at it, let's take wry neck first. Let's stick with that one, which is probably more prevalent than the limber neck. Limber neck is somewhat clear cut as far as the symptomology and the causes are concerned. When we look at wry neck, we look at a multitude of sins, and we'll start to run through them here. This can be caused by a brain injury, injury to the bird's neck from either flightiness or getting banged into something, and it doesn't take much. Most people are not out there with their birds 24/7, so you never know how some of these things they come about. Bird looks good today, and you come out in the morning, and the neck's all twisted around, or the head is twisted to one side, up, down, around, or whatever. They call it wry neck. Another name for it would be torticollis, which is just really fancier word for twisting of the neck and so on. When we talked about supplementation, we talked about the roadblock that I explained, that you can have an abundance almost all of the vitamins or all of the minerals necessary to sustain health in a bird and even life, and let one of them be deficient in the slightest manner, and the whole thing comes to a screeching halt, because a lot of these vitamins and or minerals, amino acids, depend one upon the other. The lack of one or more starts to get you into the traffic jam, the four-way stop where nobody enters the intersection and everybody backs up from the stop signs backwards. The same thing happens here. It's a chemical thing. So I'll go through a little bit of that as to, we always hear, give them vitamin E. We always hear, give them selenium. And for the most part, this is probably something, if it's being caused by a vitamin and or mineral deficiency, is probably going to work and work fairly well. I've seen it work many, many times, and I've seen other times when nothing worked. And when you get into the realm of when nothing works, you're probably talking about some other disease that might be showing itself in a different form, such as the neurological form of Merrick's. That's mm-hmm. very possible, and we'll see the twisting. You know, we don't often talk about it because that's not the norm of the way that particular disease would present itself. We're all pretty much aware of the one leg forward, one leg back, two legs out to the side, droopy wing type thing, and that is the normal one that we'll see. But every now and then, you will see the ocular form. Every now and then, you will see the neurological form. So, trying to make a decision as to, which one it is probably the hardest thing to do. So, I often recommend if a person doesn't have, vitamin E and selenium handy, the first thing you can do is you can start loading them up with aspirin. And if there is some sort of neurological swelling due to trauma or quite possibly even Merrick's, you might be able to turn the thing around. Then we come in with the curcumin as well. If you have the vitamin E and the selenium handy, I think if you're a silky person, you probably should keep some handy. I would certainly consider, if I were raising a flock of silkies myself, breeding them for sale, for show, for personal pleasure, or whatever the case may be, I would probably do some daily supplementation of my flock in an attempt to make sure that vitamin E deficiency didn't occur. And there are a couple of ways you can do that without breaking the bank. We do have available a water-soluble vitamin E that could be put on the water in the water once or twice a week, something along those lines to make sure that the vitamin E level is kept up. And this does not necessarily have any bearing on the fact of what you're feeding, other than the fact if you are feeding a lot of scratch or treats or other things that take them away from their mm-hmm. standard food. So, you know, and again, you can't see it coming till it's there. You know, it's not like, you know, you wake up one morning and go, well, I think that bird's coming down with a vitamin E deficiency. It just doesn't work that way. And it may not even be just a vitamin E deficiency because, to give you an example, vitamin E and selenium are very dependent upon each other. That's why you'll hear people say, well, get some vitamin E and some selenium and give it to them. And in many cases, that does the trick. And, you know, we have to assume that because we had a condition that appeared to warrant using these two products, the vitamin E, which is a vitamin, and the selenium, which is a mineral compound, that, you know, they were deficient in one and or the other. The interesting part about it is that there is some research around that has shown that a deficiency of vitamin E, but a non-deficiency of selenium, will keep the vitamin E deficiency from happening. So that's how closely dependent these two are on each other. So, you know, the addition of just a little bit of selenium to a bird who is totally deficient in a vitamin E diet can keep it from occurring. I'm not by any stretch saying you should run out and just supplement with selenium. You don't have to worry about the rest. I think a balance is what we're trying to say here. But if you look at the this whole deficiency thing, it only takes, when I say it takes a very small part, we've talked about parts per million before. We've even talked about parts per billion. So we know that those are really, really minuscule parts of any diet or compound. And the research that I had seen where a bird was deficient in vitamin E only required 0.01 parts per million to prevent the deficiency, okay, and only required about five times more when the deficiency was complete. In other words, no vitamin E basically at all. So we were talking about 0.05 parts per million selenium. So we're not talking huge things here, and this is, goes back, and I'm just trying to emphasize it because when we talked about this, when we did the supplementation segment, it's critical that people understand how one of these things, or all several of these things, will lean on each other. We talked about amino acids back when we talked about supplementation, and amino acids come in different forms. Two of the ones that are really important are what they call sulfa-based or sulfa amino acids. And the two that are most important in this thing are cysteine and methionine. And a deficiency in either one of those two could cause the Reineck syndrome as well. So you have at least four elements here, at least four, and I don't mean elemental elements, I'm just talking four elements of the puzzle here. You have the cysteine, methionine, and you have the vitamin E, and you have the selenium. A deficiency of any one of them can cause the symptoms of Reineck, okay? Certainly, looking at it from a standpoint of an injury certainly can cause it and does cause it. I mean, we've seen this loads of times. Merrick's disease can cause it as far as the torticollis part of it is concerned and make it appear as a case of what one might consider wry neck. And again, we don't really have any way of knowing, because if the bird doesn't come out of it and the bird is either succumbs to whatever it is or is put down, nobody, I won't say nobody, but the majority of people don't get a postmortem done and then end up not knowing what it was. Generally, and one of the other things, I don't want to leave this part out either, but genetics plays a role as well. And this may be the inability of the bird's system to absorb properly vitamin E, selenium, the cysteine, the methionine, in any combination, or it may be some muscular deformity, some brain deformity or problem within the brain that doesn't allow the neurological impulses to make its way to the musculature that's supposed to let the neck stretch out the way it should. So there are a number of different things that that can cause these. Now, sometimes a vitamin E deficiency will show itself in a totally different way. You get this what they call exudative diathesis, and this is a accumulation of fluid and or blood under the skin, and then that becomes fairly obvious, and this can even scab up a little bit as far as that kind of thing is concerned. You can also get muscular dystrophy, which would be some of this wry neck syndrome that you see, and that can be caused by the sulfur amino acids not being available or being tied up because there isn't enough selenium or there isn't enough vitamin E or any one of those things. And so we see that with the torticollis at times. But we also see that with if you were to look at the breast muscle of some of these birds that have this what we would call muscular dystrophy type situation, they have a striations, I guess you would call them, distinct. When you look at a piece of chicken breast that you buy in the store, you'll see that it's clean and basically, for the most part, one color top to bottom. You've got some cartilage running through in a couple of different places, but for the most part, you know, it's that nice off pinkish whatever color you want to call it. When you get the muscular dystrophy type of a thing, you will see what looks like more cartilage running through there, but it's not really cartilage. It is a bundling of the musculature that brings it together to do that. You can see it, and sometimes it occurs when a bird is not stunned properly in the processing plant, and it will twist those bundles of protein around and make it appear as such. I've seen it in chicken that I've bought in the store over the years, and that's generally what it looks like. So if you ever see a piece of it, you can get a glimpse of what we're talking about as far as that's concerned. For the most part, most of this is preventable at the end of the day through supplementation, through understanding that this particular problem can and does happen more so in one breed maybe than another. And the sooner you recognize it and try to mitigate the circumstance, do something about it, the quicker it'll probably go away. Certainly if it's being caused by a disease entity such as Merrick's, foul cholera, possibly even Newcastle disease. Now, I've seen Newcastle disease in birds where they were affected and the disease was affected just a small number of birds within a flock, birds that had never been vaccinated, and I've seen a flock that was positive for Newcastle but never showed a symptom. And a lot of that has to do with the level of exposure, the particular Newcastle virus that the birds became exposed to. My guess is the ones that were positive for Newcastle, that they were probably exposed somewhere along the line to a vaccine strain, unbeknownst to the owner, who at that particular time was showing birds fairly frequently, and that may be where he picked it up. But so the birds, because they were exposed to a vaccine strain, wouldn't necessarily show any of the torticollis that might be associated with the actual field virus itself, but would show up on a blood test as having been exposed, kind of like somebody that may have been exposed to tuberculosis or something like that. You have a reactive test to it, but you have no symptoms to it. And the same thing for avian influenza. Certain birds carry it and don't show any symptoms at all, but you know, when they're tested, they either can isolate it from the bird or pick up a blood titer level that shows that the bird has been exposed, but they're not showing any symptoms. So any one of those things, we get this vitamin and mineral deficiency, meaning the selenium can also cause edema on the brain, encephalomalacia, or an encephalitis, if you will, which just means that there's probably some sort of an accumulation of fluid on the brain. The quicker these things are caught, especially this type of thing, the better the chances are of turning it around and the bird going on and being, you know, fine and no other symptoms are going on. What I would do, I started to say this before and I get off on another direction, but as far as supplementation is concerned, for those who are interested, generally most of your vitamin packs don't contain selenium. Selenium is kind of an interesting product. A little bit's good, and too much is lethal. That's why in many areas it's controlled, or is a controlled type of a product. The over-the-counter stuff is probably, and I haven't seen any of that stuff at all, but the over-the-counter stuff is probably fairly weak, if my memory serves me correctly, and that's fine. You don't want an abundance of it if you have a particular reason to be using it on the human side, because that's where you're going to find it. But at any rate, usually we start looking at giving 400 international units of the vitamin E, and one international unit, just so you can put it in perspective, is equal to about 1 milligram. So that's about where you would be looking at on that. I don't know why they continue to do this international unit thing, but that's not my data, right? Straighten that mess out. But if you're looking at vitamin E requirements, they really don't require a ton of vitamin E. Certainly, injectable might be better than oral, especially if the bird is having other problems. There are fatty acids that can tie up selenium and vitamin E in the intestine. Any of these, I guess you'd call them somewhat free radicals. Some of the saturated fats, some of these are fat dependent as well. So there's a whole slew of things that go into this wry-neck situation. So if I were going to look to supplement my birds on a regular basis, I would feed kelp. Kelp is a natural product, contains small amounts of selenium, and I think by and large that you would probably get through without too much problem. And they'll eat it free choice. They'll eat it up in the beginning, maybe load up on it a little bit, but it'll work itself out where the birds will, when they've had enough of it, they'll back off of it a little bit and eat it as needed. And I think it's a real good way of getting the selenium, vitamin E, and everything into them. And if you need to, the water-soluble vitamin E is good to supplement with a couple times a week, maybe. Just don't overdo it. It's not necessary to really get crazy because they really don't really need a lot. If you're looking at young birds, their need for vitamin E varies from when they're young to adult, between 5 international units and 10 international units per kilogram of body weight. So you're looking at 5 to 10 international units per kilogram, which is 2.2 pounds. So you're not, again, talking about a ton, and you're talking about selenium that is in the parts per million range. So this would be a great product for people who have had this type of a situation where they end up with Rhinec. There are a lot of folks who, for whatever reason, have seemed to have never had the problem before, and all of a sudden it pops up. I've seen others where they started hatching, and they were coming out of the shells with these particular problems, and those can be associated again with poor supplementation of the breeding flock, to the genetic abnormalities that come with some of these so-called, I guess, fancier breeds or different breeds that are somewhere along the line obviously have some serious inbreeding done. So it doesn't take a lot of this. If you have birds, there may be some interference with feeding high levels of sunflower oil. There may be interference with feeding high levels of cod liver oil. When I say interference, these will, because of the fats that are in these particular products, will require the bird to have more vitamin E. So there may be some, and especially, again, I go back and look at the silkies and the number of problems that they have had. I would certainly take a look at supplementation with that couple of time a week basis and see if you can't prevent it from that standpoint. I would certainly supplement any breeding stock that I had in an attempt to keep the chicks from having any kind of abnormality come across through the egg because of a deficiency of either vitamin E, selenium, or the sulfur amino acids, cysteine and methionine. If you want to supplement the amino acids, that's easily doable too. You just plop them in the water every now and then, a couple times a week maybe. I think all of this could probably go to a good supplementation maybe twice a month. Once you get everything up to speed and you're happy with the way you're doing, just start backing it off a little bit and see where it takes you. All things aside, that's basically it for Rhinec itself. I can't emphasize enough the roadblocks we talked about during the supplementation segment we did a couple months ago, whenever it was. This is real, and this happens in humans and other animals just as well as it does in chickens. In some chickens, because of their genetic makeup and so on, it may happen more often. And I think that silkies fall into that particular area. And I think with proper supplementation, the whole thing can be avoided for the most part. None of it's going to be avoided 100%. Certainly, if you feel it's a genetic thing, then breed away from that particular mating. Don't continue to go on with it unless you don't have a problem, putting down those particular birds as they come out of the shell. The problem with it is you never know which ones it's going to be. That's the downside of hatching birds with any kind of genetic abnormality. But the presence of selenium, there are areas of the country, and I don't know off the top of my head what areas that are deficient, their soils are deficient to a degree in selenium. But they could check with their state agricultural department, agricultural extension agent, and find out if selenium deficiency is a problem in their area. And if it is, they might want to consider supplementation along the way. I think the best way to do it, from my perspective, is the kelp. It's not overly expensive. You put it out free choice. They eat it, don't want it, don't have to have it, and go on with it from there. It has a multitude of minerals, vitamins, and everything else. And, for those that like to follow more of a either organic or more natural, or just, don't care for any kind of chemical, whether it's a vitamin or electrolyte or whatever, it's a great way to supplement the flock. And I think that over time you'll see that better feather growth and everything else, and so from that standpoint, that because you're not going to find, to my knowledge, and I really haven't looked very hard, but I don't think you're going to find anything that you can use on a regular basis that's going to be as convenient as the kelp would be to get the selenium. You can get all the other vitamins and electrolytes, and you get all. I can get all kinds of different combinations of stuff. Straight B vitamins, water soluble. I can get C by itself. I can get electrolytes by themselves. You name it, I can get it. But getting one that actually contains some selenium that's going to be of value, to the birds, is probably not going to happen so easily. We will have available in the very near future some selenium and vitamin E injectable. The water-soluble vitamin E is available. The kelp is available. Kelp's online. The other two are not yet. Hoping to get some decent pictures of these other products and get them up, get these things going. But anyway, they are available, and if anybody wants any of it, all they do is call me or send me an email, and we can get anything that they are needing for a particular situation that may be coming up. That's the wry neck end of it, Andy. The other part of it for the limberneck is not a great deal. Did you want to take your break now? It's about 5 of my watch.
That's fine. A couple of questions before we take a break. Do you you've got the kelp, you said, online at
right.
your store, correct? Okay, there was a question in the chat room about that.
Yeah, and I think it's 5 pounds for $21.95, something along that lines. Comes in,
okay.
And it's in a container that you just open the top, put out what you want, screw the top back on it, and it keeps it, dry.
And then, so we've got that again, for folks who are listening, that's firststatevetsupply.com, firststatevetsupply.com, and Peter's direct email is chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. And one last question: let's just keep it a little simple, straightforward. If you have silkies, you're breeding silkies, and you get a hatch out, and from that hatch of, let's say, 20 birds, and you've got, I guess it's the possibility of 2 or 3 that have this. Would this alone be enough for you to, in the future, refrain from that breeding pair, or from the maybe your trio, if you see that pattern, to not breed those anymore, because that's going to be something the next you hatch will probably have a few that'll have it. Is it that prevalent to where you may want to consider not breeding those birds anymore because you're getting the wry neck?
Yeah, I think that I think this is the way I would approach it in my way of thinking. If I had made this particular mating before and not had a problem, that still does not eliminate the fact that it could be a genetic problem, because genetics is a crapshoot. You never know when it's going to show up on your doorstep. So if you had a, let's just say, a 1 in 10 chance of a abnormality, human or otherwise, chicken, happening, you never know what 10% you're going to fall into.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So those numbers are based on many either matings or whatever. So I think the way I would look at it is, you know, what kind of supplementation I was doing prior to that. I would look at my incubation procedures, you know, and make sure that everything was on the up and up there. Because just because everybody was at 100 degrees for the hatching sequence does not necessarily mean that every egg in there was at the temperature it was supposed to be. It depends on the incubator. The better, generally, mm-hmm. the incubator, the better the hatch. And I'll go back and say the Brinci incubators are probably, in my estimation, especially the old ones that they had. They used to have some real nice big ones that would rival any of the big box type incubators that mm-hmm. they had, and they were hexagon shaped, and it's the way that the air flows within the container, because mm-hmm. that's basically all it is. I mean, technically, if you had the time and wanted to go forth with the effort, you could hatch them in your oven. It's a matter of, again, what we said when we did the segments on incubation, controlling the temperature and the humidity and the turning and the whole bit. Once you get all those down right, it's not really a big deal after that. But anyway, moving on. So I would look at all of that, and then I would consider supplementation before I made the next mm-hmm. mating okay. from them, and see if it occurs again. If it occurs again, I'd be hesitant to come back and do it again. I really
right,
would.
Right.
You know, I think I would give that breeding pair, trio, or whatever, every opportunity to fix this situation. And I would probably refrain from making that mating for at least 4 weeks. And the reason I say that is you want to give them an opportunity to, you know, this kelp is great stuff, but it's not going to work as fast as, let's say, a Replimin would work for minerals, okay? And unfortunately, the Replimin doesn't contain any selenium, so it's as a direct factor, it's a non-entity in this particular situation. But I would give that breeding flock or whichever every opportunity to show that they turn this thing around after supplementation, and if they couldn't do that, I think I would breed away from that particular situation and not perpetuate it.
Okay, nice. I figured someone out there would be wondering that if they were a silky breeder. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and take a break. Top of the hour, we've been talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Don't go anywhere, because when we come back, we've got more topic for you about backyard poultry. Stay tuned, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brinci, the incubation specialist. Brinci has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinci.com. Brinci spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinci.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinci, technology you can trust. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today is Monday, so you know we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, joining us. He's just wrapped up one topic. He's going to skirt into another one here briefly, and we'll learn even more from our good friend. Alrighty, Peter, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, so, you know, the wry neck is one thing. Sometimes gets associated with limber neck. I've heard it called, several different things by different people. And not that it much matters a whole lot, but if you're treating the treatment for one is certainly different from the other. Limber neck has nothing to do with a vitamin mineral deficiency as a general rule. You always have to kind of qualify it a little bit because certainly the loss of control of a bird's neck can be caused by a number of different things, as we've just talked about in relation to the wry neck. But with limber neck, we generally do not see torticollis, which is the twisting, the bending, the looking backwards through the legs, the stargazing, the twisting from side to side, the lopsidedness, and that kind of thing. What we generally see with limber neck is the total loss of control of the neck and the inability thereof to lift that neck up. So therefore, the tip-off between the two is the torticollis on the wry neck side being caused by a multitude of things that we've already discussed, and looking at the limber neck being a totally different thing where a bird may pick up its neck but can't hold it up, or pick its head up and can't hold up the whole thing and just keeps flopping it back down on the ground. I've seen birds push themselves along, leaning on the front of their neck and their head, trying to get from place to place. I've seen other birds that won't move at all. But by and large, that is the problem that we see. And it's quite simple for the most part. I just had a case here of it about 3-4 weeks ago. Somebody called me, and the birds ingested something somewhere along the line. And that's the tip-off for you. It's actually some sort of poisoning that causes it. the same thing. Botulism is one that does come to mind. That's fairly prevalent in birds because as they forage around, especially free range, Lord only knows what they're eating. So they'll eat all the good things, no question, the bugs and beetles and all those other things that they would normally eat. But if they come across a rotting vegetation and they take a liking to it for whatever the reason, they'll eat it. That's not good either. Sometimes, rooting around in the compost pile is not a great deal either. Just depends. I know loads of people that get away with it all the time. I know others that have had birds that are sick or died or whatever. Just depends. Depends on what it is and in what stage of decay that it is. What microorganisms are there? Bacteria, possible viruses, and other things. But generally, these things that cause limber neck are caused by some sort of poisoning, the word ptomaine poisoning, which was popular years ago, which just really is a word that means that the rotting protein basically is what it means. And so this can come from rotting vegetation, this can come from decaying and rotting protein. So you're a dead rat, a dead rabbit, a dead bird, another dead chicken that wasn't discovered, or whatever. You shot the raccoon down the back of the property and just let his carcass lay there, not thinking for a moment that these birds are going to get down there and going to consume it, because they will, and if they have access to it. And there are many of these things that happen that are just purely accidental. But the big tip-off between the two is the way that they present themselves, one with the torticollis and the twisting, and the other one with just what the name implies, the neck just laying out almost straight out in front of it, the inability to either pick it up at all or the inability to pick it up and hold it up the way they normally do, because they need their neck and their head to balance to walk. So the bird is kind of becomes immobile at that point. And again, the quicker that you get after this, the quicker that it generally can be resolved. And this case that I had, and I didn't even see these birds. Somebody called me on the phone asking about it, not particularly asking what the disease was, but asking if I knew how to fix it. And as soon as they started to describe it to me, I said, well, don't have any magic wands, but I got a pretty good idea what it is, and this is what you do. So I will tell you here, too, it's very simple. And one of the reasons, if you're raising chickens, that you should probably keep some Epsom salts handy. So the remedy for this, if indeed it is being caused by some sort of toxin that was ingested by food, by mouth by these birds, a carcass, rotting vegetation, and those kinds of things, is one level teaspoon of Epsom salts and 30 cc's of water. 30 cc's would be about 2 tablespoons. And then give that to the bird however way you want to get it into it. It may not like to drink it if you just 30 cc's isn't a heck of a lot. And but at any rate, you're going to want to, I would tell you, to tube feed it, gavage it down the throat, however you can get it into the bird, all at one time. And preferably not feed this bird again until you get it cleaned out. And from the feedback that I got from this individual, a one-time deal on this cleared it right up, flushed the bird out. Has a flushing effect. Same thing it would do for humans. Going to flush that crop out, flush the intestines out, and that kind of thing. You may have to repeat it more than once if you feel the need to do so. Do so. Shouldn't be any harm whatsoever in doing it. And it isn't a big deal. And that's basically the way you tell the difference between the two. Could this be caused by a case of Marek's that is the neurological form? Yes. Could it be caused by a case of Newcastle disease? Yes, but I've never seen it. Okay? I have seen it in Marek's, but I've never seen it in Newcastle. But you can't rule it out. You just can't. But you go through all the motions of the things that you know that you should do for a thing like this, and when they don't work, then you just have to keep moving on until you find something. you know, if it after two or three feedings of this Epsom salt solution and you're really not getting anywhere, you might want to consider, you know, some other course of action, and that might be the aspirin and the 81 milligram Bayer brand. I say Bayer, it's the gold standard. You can use anything, you know, if you've got the generic form, I wouldn't go out and buy a bottle. I take an aspirin, a baby aspirin every day for myself, for my health, and I choose to buy the Bayer brand. It's not that big a deal for me, but at any rate, they're inexpensive, and I would give one of those Bayer aspirin three times a day and see if that doesn't, clean that situation up in case it's being caused by something else that we might be able to mitigate before it gets a real good toehold on the bird. The chances of, in both of these cases, from my perspective, and there may be somebody that would have a different perspective on it, and I would respect that because I don't see every case that is everywhere. Mm-hmm. But the chances of these things being straightened out and fixed probably run right in the category of 60-40, 50-50. Again, depending on what's causing it, depending on how quickly you get after it and how well the medication and or supplementation is completed, and whether or not there's a genetic underlying factor that is going to prevent the bird from absorbing the nutrients the way they need to be. Foul cholera is not something we normally talk about so much because it's not something we generally see in the backyard show arena. It is more of a problem in your commercial poultry and less of a problem these days than it has been in the past. Bigger problem in turkeys, okay? It's very, very lethal for turkeys. But it also can cause neurological damage and things of that nature. And you don't always have to have all of the classic symptoms of foul cholera. Foul cholera, the causative agent there is Pasteurella multocida. It's a bacteria, can be very aggressive, and it can be held at bay with Baitril, sulfa drugs, and that kind of thing. Whether or not it can be cured in a particular bird, I'd say the chances of curing it in a backyard show setting are probably better than they would be in a commercial setting, because if they're commercial egg layers, they're not going to be able to medicate them and use the eggs anyway, so they're going to sustain the losses, market the flock, and move on. But in most places where they know there's been a problem with it over the years, they use the cholera vaccines. In turkeys, they have a tendency to use more of the live vaccines, which can be very, very volatile in chickens. But there are places where they use the live vaccines in chickens as well. Foul cholera, it's kind of like a crib death thing in a way. You can have absolutely no symptoms whatsoever and have dead birds. And I know that's not the crux of this conversation here today. I'm just pointing it out that that does happen. Birds with no symptoms whatsoever. That may be caused with no symptomology at all. A bird could be very healthy today, looking you square in the eye, your best friend, and then be dead tomorrow. It's just the way that particular disease works. It's not as common as seeing the twisting of the heads and the stargazing things that can be caused with it, and the swelling and the edema of the face, the wattles, and that kind of thing. But just be aware that that does happen. We did talk about foul cholera a good long time ago, but and again, it's not something that we normally see in the backyard setting for the most part. But so that's the way you tell basically the difference between the two, and that's how you would fix either one, mm-hmm. If indeed they become something that is fixable. And there you have it.
Awesome. Very good. Great information. I know we've experienced this before. Just once with all the flocks that we've had, but we did experience, so it's something people need to be aware about with backyard flocks, and especially if, you know, you're hatching out and you're getting new chickens there and on a regular basis, something to add to the knowledge pot that you've got for your backyard flock, and that answered really all of my questions for both, and determining which one and how to treat and the whole nine yards. So very good information, Doc, and I appreciate it. Let me just kind of let everybody know again, great information. You love the show every Monday with Peter. Visit them online, firststatevetsupply.com. In our opinion here at Chicken Whisperer, Inc., if he doesn't have it, you don't need it. You can give them contact them via email if you've got continued questions possibly about the show. Again, chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com, and that's his website where you can get all these great things in his store. Again, www.firststatevetsupply.com. And he's still, as always, the heat is upon us. It's going to be upon us for at least another 4 to 6 weeks, depending on where you live. And he's also has those free artist renderings of the swamp cooler that he can send out to you free of charge. Hopefully you've taken advantage of that. If not, definitely do that. Again, free of charge. And that's also chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. So, Peter, that's awesome information. Great show today. Lots of great information. Very pertinent for anybody that's got backyard flock. And many have probably had this, didn't know what it was, didn't know how to treat it. And they're getting into breeding and hatching out, and this is information they'll be able to use if they see signs and symptoms with their newbies. So we appreciate you coming on as always, and we look forward to seeing you as always next Monday at 12 p.m.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Alrighty, thank you. Alrighty, always love it when Peter's on. You're not going to get this information anywhere else, folks. I mean, nowhere. No blog, no forum, no nothing. And a lot of that information, like we've said on the show before, is just bull hockey, and we've covered some of that. You know, the blockbuster segments that we do. Here you can tune in every Monday, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, the first and third Thursday of every month. We got Dr. McRae, PhD, poultry scientist and poultry professor, on to give you the real information, the good information, the first time to save your flock, treat your flock, to identify what's wrong with your flock, so there's nowhere else to go. You're not going to get this information anywhere else, bottom line. So we thank you for tuning in on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And again, we hope you'll tune in tomorrow. Become a regular listener with us, and we'll wrap up the show by sending a shout-out to all of our homeschoolers for getting back in the routine. Thank you very much for tuning in on a regular basis. Good luck to you this year and with your curriculum. All of the online listeners that listen to the radio show live and are in the chat room, thank you very much for tuning in. Our longtime listeners, all of those who listen to the archive, we appreciate you too, listening 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We do appreciate you. We know you can't listen live. You're out in the garden, you're out teaching, you're out working, you're out driving, but you listen in the evening once you get home. Thank you so much for doing so. And all the feed and seed stores across the country, you know who you are, that stream this radio show live every day for your customers. We thank you as well. Hope business is doing grand. And we hope you'll continue to tune in every day, Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. God bless.